Reports of large, unidentified animals in remote environments have long existed between observation and speculation. Among them, the creature said to inhabit Loch Ness remains one of the most persistent. Accounts are inconsistent and often disputed, yet they have endured, shaped by culture, technology, and evolving standards of evidence. What emerges is not only a question of existence, but of how such observations became a shared narrative. Welcome in to the Ominous Archives. Hey, archive members. I'm Nick.
And I'm Em.
And for this month, we are running a, I guess you call Lake Monsters Month.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so each week this week we should be coming up with a different lake monster from all over. I don't really think we have a general area. They're just all over.
No general area.
So for this episode, we are going to focus on the Loch Ness Monster, who's often referred to as Nessie. A subject that mixes early historical writing, regional folklore, and modern media amplification. We'll begin with the earliest known references, move through the modern legend, and conclude with reported sightings and the attempts to investigate them. As with all the topics we covered, our approach is grounded in available evidence while remaining attentive to broader cultural and psychological explanations that support the more mysterious beliefs that persist. So, the earliest known account connected to the Loch Ness Monster comes from a religious text written over a century after the events it describes. In 565 AD, St. Columba is said to have encountered a creature in the River Ness, which flows from Loch Ness into the Scottish Highlands. Columba was a prominent Irish abbot, missionary, and scholar whose influence spread across early medieval Scotland. He played a key role in converting the Picts and was known not only for his religious authority, also for accounts of miracles, diplomacy, and the founding of the monastic communities. This made his claim about the creature valid amongst his supporters. The account of his encounter with the so-called water beast is preserved in The Life of St. Columba, written in the late 17th century by Adamana. This text serves as the primary source for this episode, and it is within this context that the first written reference to a creature associated with Loch Ness appears. According to Adavnan, Columba came up with a group of Picts along the River Ness. It's so weird saying River Ness. I just want to say Loch Ness. Along the River Ness, who were in the process of burying a man reportedly killed by a large aquatic creature. The narrative continues with a demonstration of Columba's authority, both spiritual and physically. After reviving the dead man, a detail consistent with the broader pattern of miracles attributed to him, Columba instructed one of his followers to cross the river. As the man entered the water, the creature is said to have reappeared, approaching rapidly. At this point, the account shifts from observation to intervention. Columba is described as making the sign of the cross and issuing a direct command to the creature to halt and retreat. According to the text, the creature immediately complied, withdrawing into the depths. The event concludes not with further conflict, but with conversation. The observing Picts, witnessing both resurrection, and command over the natural world are said to have embraced Christianity.
From a historical standpoint, this account needs to be treated carefully. The life of St. Columba is a type of religious writing meant to show the holiness of a person, not to record events the way modern history or science would. Stories of miracles in these texts are meant to show divine power, not to serve as proof. It was also written about 100 years after the event it describes, which leaves room for changes or exaggeration over time. This does not mean the account has no value, but it does mean it should read in context. The water beast could reflect a local story, a symbolic idea, or a retelling of something that was not fully understood. What can be said with certainty is that this is the earliest known written reference connecting a large, unknown creature of the waters of Loch Ness. The loch's environment also plays an important role. Loch Ness is one of the deepest and largest bodies of fresh water in the United Kingdom, reaching depths of around 230 meters. It was formed along a geological fault and shaped by glaciers, resulting in a long, narrow, steep-sided basin. Its size alone makes clear observation difficult, which I guess I never really thought about how big it is.
Mm-hmm. How like big the loch is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I never really, like, considered how large it is.
Mm-hmm.
The water itself is dark and murky due to peat washed in from the surrounding land. Light does not travel far below the surface, so objects quickly become hard to see. The temperature stays fairly consistent throughout the year, just above 5 degrees Celsius, which prevents freezing but also limits the amount of life in the loch. These conditions make it easy to misjudge size, distance, and movement. Because of this, ordinary things such as large fish, swimming deer, floating debris, or wave patterns can appear unusual or even animate. When visibility is low and scale is hard to judge, unclear shapes can take on meaning. It's also important to note that this early account stands alone. There is no steady record of sightings following it for centuries. The story appears, then disappears, only to be revisited much later. What remains is a single written account shaped by religious purpose and set in an environment that makes clear observation difficult. From this limited and uncertain starting point, the later legend would grow.
So by the early 20th century, the story recorded by Donovan had largely faded from attention, known more as a historical note than an active legend. The idea of the creature in the Loch Ness did not slowly grow over time. Instead, it quickly became widely known in the early 1930s, shaped by changes in the travel, media, and public interest. A major turning point came in 1933, when a new road was built along the loch. This made the water much easier to see and access. For the first time, people could regularly observe long stretches of the loch from the land. With more people passing by, sightings increased, suggesting that simple visibility played a key role in the rise of modern reports. That same year, newspapers began publishing stories about a large, unknown creature in the water. One of the most well-known accounts came from a couple who claiming to have seen a large animal moving through the loch. These reports spread quickly, often using dramatic language that highlighted size and mystery, encouraging public interest and speculation. At the time, between the two world wars, there was a strong public appetite for unusual and engaging stories. Easy access to news and a growing audience helped the story spread far beyond Scotland. What had once been a single, old account began to develop into a modern legend, sustained not by clear evidence, but by repeated reporting and widespread attention.
The media's role in shaping the Loch Ness story is significant. Newspapers did more than report sightings. They influenced how people understood what they were seeing. Once the idea of a large creature in Loch Ness became widely known, ordinary things like waves, debris, or animals could be interpreted as something unusual. In this way, the legend began to support itself. This is clear in the surgeon's photograph from 1934. The image appeared to show a long neck and a small head rising from the water, and it was widely accepted as strong evidence at the time. Because it looked clearer than earlier reports, it carried more weight and was often referenced for decades. The photograph was later revealed to be a hoax, created using a small model attached to a toy submarine. Even after this was exposed, the overall belief in the legend did not disappear. By then, the story had grown beyond any single piece of evidence. Later investigations, including sonar scans, underwater photography, and DNA testing, have not found proof of a large unknown animal. Instead, they point to more common explanations, such as large fish, eels, floating logs, or wave patterns. While these explanations fit the conditions of the loch, they are less compelling than the idea of a hidden creature, of course. The continued interest in Nessie shows how legends can adapt over time. New technology has not solved the mystery, but it has changed how people engage with it. Each generation revisits the same question using new tools, often reaching similar conclusions. Despite the lack of clear evidence, Nessie remains an important part of both local culture and global imagination. Whether seen as an undiscovered animal, a misinterpretation of natural events, or a story shaped by the media, the legend continues because it's sustained by visibility, repeated reporting, and a lasting interest in the unknown.
Long before the Loch Ness Monster became a modern mystery, the waters of Scotland and the wider Celtic world were already filled with creatures that existed between the natural and the supernatural. These stories do not describe Nessie directly, but they do create a setting where such a creature would not seem unusual. Among the most well-known are Selkies, beings that can shift between seal and human form. Found in Scottish and Irish coastal stories, they often represent transformation, loss, and a strong pull toward the sea. The Kelpie, another common figure, is a water spirit said to live in lochs and rivers, often luring people to their deaths. Other variations, like the Finn folk and the Blue Men of the Minch, continue this pattern, portraying the sea as an active and sometimes dangerous place. What connects these stories is not how the creature looks, but what they represent. Deep water is often seen as a boundary between the known and unknown. The surface separates what we can see from what we cannot, making it a place where meaning is uncertain. The idea also appears in psychology. Deep water is often used as a symbol of the unconscious mind, something hidden, unclear, and difficult to understand. When people face unclear or incomplete information, they tend to fill the gaps, turning vague shapes or movements into something familiar. In places like Loch Ness, where the water is dark and visibility is low, this effect is even stronger. Seen this way, the Loch Ness Monster is not an isolated idea, but part of a larger tradition. It represents a shift from older folklore into a modern global story. Unlike earlier creatures, Nessie is not tied to a clear moral lesson, but exists mainly as something to observe and question. At the same time, the legend is taken on a practical role. It has become part of the identity of the Scottish Highlands, drawing visitors interested in the possibility of the unknown. Nessie continues to exist not because it has been proven, but because it fits into a long-standing culture and psychological pattern that expects and even sustains such mysteries.
As the legend of the Loch Ness Monster grew, it began to draw serious scientific attention. Earlier accounts were mostly personal stories, but by the mid-20th century, organized efforts began using technology and structured observation to investigate the claims. One of the first major efforts came from the Loch Ness Investigation Bureau, founded in 1961. The group conducted expeditions for over a decade, including regular shore watches and night observations, aiming to capture clear, repeatable evidence. Despite these efforts, nothing conclusive was found, and the group disbanded in 1977. At the same time, researchers began using new technology. In the 1970s, Robert H. Rhines led a large investigation using underwater cameras and sonar. Over 100,000 images were taken, and sonar scans were used to search for large objects beneath the surface. Some images appeared to show shapes that could be part of a creature, but none were confirmed as such. Later efforts followed a similar pattern. Operation Deep Scan, led by Adrian Shine, used multiple boats to scan the loch with sonar. It was one of the most thorough searches at the time, but again, it did not find evidence of a large unknown animal.
I think there's a Hidden Monsters or one of those shows on History or Discovery Channel.
Honestly, if I get too deep into thinking about what's in water, I'll never go in water again. So I try to stay away from all the water ones.
Well, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it was that specific operation.
Yeah.
But they followed an operation that did something like that. Like, they were scanning areas of the loch.
It's sick that, we have the technology to do that now. Further studies, including those by the BBC, used advanced sonar to map the loch in detail. Those also found no sign of a creature matching Nessie's description. Researchers also tested how people interpret what they see. In one experiment, a simple object was briefly shown in the water, and some observers later described it as a creature. This suggested that expectation can strongly influence perception.
In the absence of clear evidence, several explanations have been proposed for the reported sightings. Many involve misidentifying known animals, such as seals, large fish, or even swimming deer, which can look unusual when partly underwater. More recent research has focused on large eels. A study by Neil Gamel found a high amount of eel DNA in Loch Ness, but there are no genetic signs of any unknown large animal. Other explanations focus on the environment, floating debris, wave patterns, and boat wakes can create shapes that appear to move like living things. The loch's dark, peat-filled water also makes it hard to see clearly, which affects how people judge size and distance. Under these conditions, brief or unclear sightings can seem more significant than they are. Despite many decades of research, no physical evidence has been found to support the existence of a large unknown creature. There are no confirmed remains, no verified biological samples, and no clear images that meet scientific standards. New technology, such as sonar, underwater cameras, and DNA testing, have improved how the loch is studied, but they've not changed the overall outcome. Even so, interest continues. Recent searchers have used tools such as drones and underwater microphones to detect unusual movement or sounds. These efforts show that the question is still being explored, even if past results have been inconclusive. The key difference lies between personal accounts and scientific evidence. Eyewitness reports are common, but they can be influenced by perception and expectation. Scientific methods, on the other hand, require clear, repeatable proof. In the case of the Loch Ness Monster, these two approaches have not aligned.
The persistence of the Loch Ness Monster as a subject of inquiry is due in large part to the accumulation of reported sightings across decades. These accounts vary in detail, medium, and credibility, but taken together, they form a pattern of reoccurring observation rather than a single continuous narrative. What follows is not a validation of these claims, but an examination of how they have been recorded and interpreted over time. So in 1933, one of the earliest and most frequently cited modern accounts involves George Spicer and his wife, who reported seeing a large unidentified creature crossing the road near Loch Ness. The description emphasized size and an unusual elongated form, contributing to the now familiar image of Nessie as a long-necked animal. And then in 1955, a widely circulated photograph appeared to show two humps breaking the surface of the water. Estimates based on scale suggested a creature of considerable size, in some cases exceeding 50 feet in length. In 1960, Tim Dinsdale, an aeronautical engineer turned investigator, captured footage of a moving object in the loch. By aerial reconnaissance, specialists from the British Ministry of Defense concluded that the subject was probably an animate object, though no definitive identification was made. In the 1960s, academic and independent groups, including students from Oxford and Cambridge, conducted observational expeditions. The Loch Ness Investigation Bureau coordinated systematic photography and sonar-based searches, particularly during night operations. In 1972, investigations led by Robert H. Rhines produced underwater images that, after enhancement, appeared to show flipper-like appendages and portions of a body. These images prompted cautious interest among some scientists, though interpretations remained inconclusive. In 1976, extended searches involving over 100,000 images and sonar readings detected large moving shapes beneath the surface. Several photographers were interpreted as possible anatomical features, though none were verified.
In 1996, following a personal sighting, Gary Campbell launched the official Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register, a centralized database cataloging reported encounters. The archive, which now contains over 1,000 entries, organizes sightings across centuries, reflecting both historical continuity and modern reporting practices. In 1997, a motorist reported observing multiple dark humps moving through the water and captured a series of photographs. These images are often cited within enthusiast communities as among the more compelling visual records, though they remain subject to interpretation. In 2016, an amateur photographer captured an image described as showing a head and a serpentine neck moving through the water. The image's relative clarity distinguished it from earlier reports, though its interpretation remains disputed. In 2018, Ricky Phillips, who's a 39-year-old British military historian and tour guide from Edinburgh, I think I said that right, sorry, UK, best known for his books on warfare, photographed what he described as a creature with a long neck and a distinct head shape. Deepak Ram, a NHS doctor, observed a stationary dark mass beneath the surface initially perceived as a wave before appearing to submerge. And then in 2019, there were a total of 18 sightings recorded, the highest number in decades. While individually unremarkable, collectively they demonstrate the continued frequency of reported observation.
Across reported sightings, clear patterns emerge. Most occur under poor visibility at a distance or over a short period of time, requiring interpolation of unclear shapes or movement. Technology, whether photography, sonar, or digital imaging, has not removed this uncertainty, but it changed how it appears. While these tools make it easier to capture and share observations, they do not guarantee accurate identification. Efforts to organize sightings, such as official registers, aim to bring structure to these reports. However, more data has not led to clearer answers. Instead, it highlights the difference between repeated sightings and proven evidence. This helps explain why the legend continues. The Loch Ness Monster is less about proof and more about belief shaped by media, repetition, and the tendency to give meaning to uncertain information. Each new sighting or investigation, regardless of outcome, keeps the idea active. At the same time, scientific research has narrowed the range of likely explanations, pointing towards known animals' environmental factors. This creates a balance between skepticism and imagination. Nessie exists between these two, neither confirmed nor fully dismissed. The legend endures because it does not require resolution. It offers a way to engage with uncertainty. It's something observed but never fully explained. In a place like Loch Ness, where visibility is limited and conditions are unclear, the absence of evidence does not end the story. It allows it to continue.
So across centuries, the idea of a creature in the Loch Ness has been approached through distinct lenses, each offering a different framework for interpretation. From the historical record, there exists a single early account preserved in religious writing and shaped as much by its purpose as by the events it describes. From folklore and cultural tradition, a broader pattern emerges, one in which deep water is consistently associated with uncertainty, transformation, and the presence of something beyond clear understanding. From the reported sightings, a modern accumulation of observations between photographs, sonar readings, and personal accounts suggests reoccurring anomalies but does not provide definitive proof. Taken together, these perspectives do not resolve the question, though. The Loch Ness Monster persists as a sustained possibility existing in the space between observation and explanation. Scientific inquiry has narrowed what can be reasonably asserted, while cultural and psychological factors continue to sustain interest in what cannot be fully dismissed. The question, then, is not whether such a creature exists in a measurable sense, but why the search continues. Why return repeatedly to the same body of water under the same conditions of uncertainty, in pursuit of something that has never been conclusively found? So that wraps the episode. We would like to thank Sam, as she wrote this episode, and we would like you to go check out her podcast if you have an interest in horror, thriller, or dark fantasy books. And don't forget to check us out on all of our social medias. Or if you have a topic of your own, or you would just prefer to reach out, shoot us an email. And, you know, we get back in somewhat of a fast manner.
Timely fashion.
It's not weeks. I would say maybe a day or so. But other than that, we hope you stay weird and stay haunted. See ya.
See ya.